Welcome to the 335th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host for today, Patrick Winograd. In this edition, our topics are a review of my weekend predictions, a look at the CFP, a look at the NFL playoffs, our weekly look at the NBA, and also a recap of the past week in college basketball. So let's jump right in with a look back at my weekend predictions, starting in college football, where I went 2-0. In the NFL, I went 4-0. In college basketball, I went 3-1. And in the NBA, I went 3-1, which means that overall I went 12-2 this week, bringing me to a 14-54-918 overall record, a 61.3% winning percentage. So, going back to the top, obviously very, very happy with this week of predictions. In college football, I picked Indiana, I picked Miami. Obviously, as we all know by now, Indiana just demolished Oregon, and then Miami got the close victory against Ole Miss, the game-winning drive late there, and Ole Miss not able to have their prayers answered on the final real long shot drive where they needed a touchdown. In the NFL, I picked, well, really I went 6-0 if you include the other games that I talked about on the podcast previously. But the Bears beat the Packers 31-27. The Bills beat the Jaguars 27-24. The Patriots beat the Chargers 16-3. And then the Texans beat the Steelers 30-6, all of which I predicted correctly. So again, very, very happy. Not many notes this week, just happy to predict these games correctly, get the wins. And then in college basketball, I went 3-1. Florida beat number 21 Tennessee 91-67, which I predicted correctly. The only game I got wrong this week was Nebraska, who beat Indiana 83-77 on the road. And they stay undefeated with that win. Crazy season they're having. Auburn beat number 15 Arkansas 95-73, which I predicted correctly. And then number 16 Illinois was my road pick of the week. They beat number 19 Iowa 75-69 on the road. So again, a great week there. Not even really upset at all with Nebraska winning because frankly, they played Ohio State close, and I just thought, you know what? This team does have to lose at some point. No offense to Nebraska, but there's nothing indicating that this is an all-time dominant team, and it's pretty much become impossible to go undefeated in college basketball. So they're gonna lose at some point. And I figured that, maybe the first conference road trip might be the time that that happened. And after they escaped against Ohio State, I thought, they're playing an Indiana team that needs a signature victory, especially at home. This is a golden opportunity for them. And I thought things, collided well with each other. That Nebraska would have that first loss, but it was not to be, not this weekend at least. And then in the NBA, the Celtics beat the Raptors 125-117, which I predicted correctly. The Sixers went on the road and beat the Magic 103-91, which I got correct. The Suns beat the Knicks 112-107. And then the only game I got wrong was that the Cavs beat the Timberwolves 146-134. I picked the Timberwolves in that game. But again, anytime I go 12-2 in a week, I'm going to be very, very happy about it. And we'll call it a positive week of predictions. But obviously, stay tuned for my predictions for next weekend, which will come out on Thursday, as always. But now, let's continue with our college football playoff talk. As we all know, by now, as I said earlier, Indiana stormed their way into the championship game with a 56-22 win against Oregon. Started off with a pick six on the first drive, just never really stopped from there. This was a 35-7 game at the half. Oregon did their best to keep it respectable, but I mean only the second half ended up being respectable because, they were down 35-7 at the half. So not a great performance for the Ducks whatsoever, but for Indiana, obviously, just a continued show of their dominance. Which they have just really done all season. I mean, even when these teams played in Autzen, it was a 10-point game. So winning by 10 on the road, already a pretty good sign for when you play the same team again at a neutral site. But I don't think anybody really expected a 34-point beatdown, but still, the Hoosiers definitely were going to win this game. I felt pretty confident about that one. But definitely the margin that they did it in was just surprising and obviously leads into the next matchup, which was number 10 Miami. That's who they're going to play because Miami won a close one against Ole Miss. This one, 17-13 halftime lead for the Hurricanes, eventually turned into a 17-16 game heading into the fourth quarter, and then 14 fourth quarter points by Miami eventually allowed them to prevail 31 to 27. A really, really fun back and forth matchup. Just a great game to watch. But the issue for Miami, of course, is that that means they have to play against Indiana next. And frankly, for it's funny because before the playoff bracket, I think I'd said that I think I like whoever comes out of the bottom half of the bracket because I thought it was a lot tougher. But then I also said, you look at Indiana, Oregon, Texas Tech, whoever does come out of that matchup is going to have a pretty good chance against whoever they end up playing. I just thought that, maybe two of the three potential title favorites before there was kind of a drop off were on that bottom line. But that bottom line had Georgia and Ohio State, of course, and those were the two that lost in the previous round to this Ole Miss team and to this Miami team. So, of course, when it was supposed to be those two, I thought that winner might win the national championship. But now that we're here and Indiana's not playing Georgia, they're not playing Ohio State in a rematch, they're playing Miami, things have changed. I think everybody kind of is in agreement on this one that Indiana should win this game, barring anything crazy. I mean, look, Miami does have the ability to just kind of run the ball, keep it low possession, keep it close, and just hope that they get a few breaks to go their way. That's certainly an okay thing to do against this team. I mean, we saw Penn State almost do that to success against Indiana. But I think this is just a Hoosiers team playing at a different level right now. I don't think there's anything that Miami can do really stylistically that's going to swing this game in their favor. They can keep it closer, but I don't think anything they're going to do is going to make this game a winnable one, to be fair, and to be frank here. Look, they're favored, Indiana, excuse me, is favored by 8.5 in this game. And I think for fair reasons, I think they have just kind of dominated throughout the playoffs. And even when people said that maybe Alabama had a size advantage on the line and that would help Indiana, or that would help Alabama, beat Indiana or, do whatever in that game, it clearly didn't manifest on the field at all. And the same thing's true in the Oregon game. So I don't think whatever stat you can give, whatever offensive line this, defensive line that, you can say about Indiana, they've just stormed through these playoffs no matter who the matchup has been against, and no matter what other teams throw at them, they have just been on a different level. And I don't see a reason to stop, or I don't see a reason that will stop in this game. I don't see a reason to pick against it stopping, even if it does happen and I end up being wrong. I'm not saying that this is, one of the best teams of all time or anything, but once it's all said and done, if they get one more dominant win on the board, we might start looking back at this season in a different light because this would be a 16-0 national champion with this new extended playoff format. That is something that is really, really remarkable. And I'm definitely going to pick Indiana to win. I'll say this game is probably going to end up, let's call it 35-24. I think Miami does keep it relatively close, but doesn't really keep it within, a possession at the end of the game. I don't think it's going to be a situation like that at all. But moving on from the college football playoff, it's time to talk about more playoff football, this time in the NFL. As I mentioned earlier, based on what I said last podcast, I went 6-0 in predictions, which I'll be very happy with. I mean, a few of those were kind of just throwing darts at the board. I said, there's always a weird upset, so I'll pick the 49ers, and that was essentially my whole reasoning. But mostly because I also don't really trust either team, and I think either of them loses in the next round anyway, so I didn't really care about, frankly, who I was picking that much in that game too much. But we're here now. The 49ers did win. I mean, we'll start there. They won 23 to 19. They obviously used that great, that amazing design on the trick play. It really gave them the final bit of momentum they needed to get over the hump and take the lead and then eventually win that game. Obviously, the Eagles, their drives at the end of the game stalled out. There's a lot that people have been making of play calling and, drops by AJ Brown. I mean, there's so many things that you could talk about in reality. But the thing is, this team just played like it had pretty much for a majority of the season. They just looked meh on offense. I think that's the best way to describe it. This has kind of been the MO. You look at their losing streak in the middle of the season to the Cowboys, the Bears, and the Chargers. They scored 21, 15, and 19. Even the two games before that, they scored 10 against the Packers. They scored 16 against the Lions. They won those games, but that's because of their defense, not because of their offense. They beat the Commanders and they beat the Raiders after that losing streak. But even the win against the Bills did not do anything on offense. The Eagles just did slightly more, and that slightly more was just 13 points. So The offense hasn't been there all season. The Niners did what you needed to do, which was come up with one big play to get above that kind of mid-teens range of points against the Eagles, and it worked for them. They got into the 20s by getting that trick play up and over the defense to Christian McCaffrey to get them that extra touchdown that they needed. And in the end, that led to the win. The Eagles got a few turnovers that they didn't in good position, in good field position, I should say, that they didn't really capitalize on either. There's a lot of things you can say about the Eagles, but really, in my opinion, it was just the same old Eagles we've seen all season, especially in the later half, where it just never looked quite the same as the dominant Super Bowl run that they had last year. Then, moving on from that, you had the same old Bears. They decided to make everything really hard on themselves by going down by a ton before the half. And then at the end of the game, they decided to come back and play their hearts out. And they did end up getting rewarded with a victory against the Packers. They won 31 to 27, a crazy second half comeback in this game, obviously. I mean, you just can't say enough about this team. No matter what the deficit is, you feel like the game's just not over. I think this one at 21 to 3. I had a weird feeling because I looked at the score and I'm seeing 21 to 3 Packers, they're the favorites on the road, they're winning. I went, I guess I got that prediction wrong. And then I went, but did I? Like, the Bears have come back from worse than 21 to 3. I mean, this is the team that was down that needed the onside kick and a 2-point conversion and a field goal to beat the Packers the last time they played them. Well, what's new? And in the end, nothing was new. They came back and they did what they do every game. The Packers, to be fair, made a few mistakes. Obviously, Brandon McManus missing, I think, three total kicks in the game definitely had a massive impact on this game for sure. Don't get me wrong there. That is definitely true. But the Bears did the same thing they always did. They just clawed their way back into the game. Caleb Williams aired it out down the field. They got a few penalties. They got a lot of stops in the second half. Obviously, 21 first half points for the Packers. Six in the second half. That missed extra point was kind of the final nail in the coffin where you went, wait a minute, the Bears are going to find a way to work their magic in this one. And again, they were down 21 to 6 heading into the fourth quarter. They scored 25 points in the fourth quarter, which is just, it's insane what they've done all season long. And it's even crazier that it just feels like they're going to do it every time anyway, no matter really what the circumstances are. Like, I really, frankly, that was a game that if any other team was playing, I probably would have just turned it to some college basketball, or at least started paying more attention to college basketball that was on at that time. But because it was that team, it felt like, hold on a minute, let's keep our eyes on this. You just never know what's going to happen. And of course, that sets them up with a matchup with the Rams because the Rams beat the Panthers 34-31 again. This game was really odd. The Rams started out with a 14-0 lead. Carolina really did have their fair share of chances to take over this game. The Rams left some points on the board before halftime. Carolina went down the field, scored in a minute to make it 17-14, and then the Rams had a chance to get in a field goal range, and they did get in a field goal range. But the issue is they didn't kick the field goal. They went for it on 4th and 3. They didn't get it. And then the Panthers got the ball, kneeled down, and went to half. And then all of a sudden, Panthers struck first in the second half, and the Rams were in a dogfight. It was 17-17 after the first drive of the third quarter for the Panthers. Eventually, of course, the Rams did pull away, retook the lead on a field goal. Panthers went back with a touchdown. Rams got another touchdown of their own. And then after Carolina scored with 2:39 left, it was time for the MVP to take over, and that's exactly what he did. Matt Stafford on that final drive of the game, of course, marching the Rams down the field, just one incompletion on their 2-minute drive. He went 7-yard pass, 10-yard pass, 6-yard pass, 18-yard pass, incompletion, which was a drop by Devontae Adams. It was not really Stafford's fault at all, by the way. But 11-yard pass, 19-yard touchdown pass, and all of a sudden, that was with 38 seconds left. Carolina had no chance. Their last drive kind of went out like a whimper, and the Rams ended up winning. So, of course, I was happy with that personally, and also on the predictions level because for a second it looked like I was going to start out 0-1, and of course I ended up losing zero games in prediction. So very happy with that result. But that was the start of the playoffs. That was the NFC, of course. Continuing on with the NFC for a second, The divisional round, of course, the Seahawks against 49ers and the Bears against the Rams. I think these are two straightforward games, at least in my opinion. The Rams and the Seahawks have been the teams that I think everybody thought was gonna ma were gonna match up at some point in the playoffs, and probably would be the NFC Championship game should the seeding work out, and if not, be a game that decides who goes to the NFC Championship game. And at this point, I'm still picking the based on the Rams going on the road and already winning on the road. I'm picking the Rams again. I think the Bears will probably pull some voodoo comeback stuff to come back in this game, but I do think the Rams will eventually pull out a win. Yeah, I'm picking the Rams over the Bears. I think I'll put it in the score range of probably like a 28 to 24 type game. Maybe the Rams will be up, I don't know. Or maybe 27-24 and the Rams are up by, I don't know, let's call it 24 to 10 at the half or something, and the Bears will score, I don't know, 10, 17, whatever they need to do points in the fourth quarter to keep it close, as they always seem to do. But then in the Seahawks game, all joking aside, I mean, they're so much better than the 49ers are. I think they've proven this time and time again over the course of the season. Obviously, they played each other twice, and the Seahawks did win, or excuse me, the Niners won the opener 17-13, but that was the Seahawks at the beginning of the year. When they played them at the end of the year, the Seahawks won 13-3. They really, I mean, they were kind of toying with the 49ers in this game, and that was on the road. So I don't think the 49ers are going on the road to Seattle in the playoffs and getting a victory. It just, I don't see that happening. So I'm definitely picking Seattle here. I'll give it the range of, I'll say, frankly, 24 to 14, I think, is probably going to be the score of that game. I don't think it's going to be particularly close, and neither does Vegas. It's the 7.5 point line. But of course, Seahawks coming off the bye, so maybe some rust there. You never know. I think that's why I have it as a lower scoring game, despite still picking them to win by a lot. Then, moving on to the AFC side of things, you had two games that were complete and total blowouts and one good game. Of course, the good game was the first one, between the Bills and the Jaguars. Bills ended up winning that one 27-24. Josh Allen got the game-winning drive. Trevor Lawrence unable to come up with one of his own, although pretty much just like the Rams and Panthers game, it was one team got their drive that could win them the game. They put it in their defense's hands, and their defense couldn't stop the other quarterback from marching down the field. That's what Josh Allen did. That's what the Rams did, and Matt Sta or that's what Matt Stafford and the Rams did, and both of those teams end up advancing. Of course, the Bills, I talked about being not super confident in their ability to win that game, but still wanting to pick them and picking them. That's what happened. They won. Pretty happy about it. And then in the other two games, look, the Chargers couldn't get on the board. They just couldn't get their offense going at any point in this game. 16-3, the Patriots end up with the win. And then also the Steelers, same story as the Chargers, couldn't get their offense going. So the Texans end up with a 30-6 win in that game as well. Which brings us, of course, to the divisional round. Don't need to spend much time on the blowouts, and I'm not going to. The Bills and the Broncos facing off. It's a very, 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 very entertaining matchup, and so is the Patriots and the Texans. I mean, both of these matchups are great. I think the Bills and the Texans both have their individual strengths that a lot of people ascribe to those teams as reasons why they should advance far in the playoffs. And yet the teams that they're playing are arguably more complete, are definitely, not arguably, are more complete teams. And that's why they have better regular seasons. The Broncos are the number one seed in the AFC because of how good they were overall. Yes, they won a ton of close games, but so did the Chiefs last year. They made the Super Bowl off of doing that. If I'm going official predictions, it's really, really tight for me. But I do think that the Broncos beat the Bills. I mean, the Bills have struggled on the road in the playoffs. And obviously, they kind of got the monkey off their back by beating the Jaguars on the road. But no offense to the Jaguars, that environment is not mile high. I think the Bills have continuously, again, as I said, struggled in the road postseason games. And I think that this is the time that they kind of revert back to those struggles and the Broncos end up winning this game. I think they have what it takes on the defensive end. I think they'll get enough offense in this game. I'm not really particularly fazed by the Bills' defense from the Broncos' behalf. So I think Denver does escape with this victory coming off the bye. And then in the Patriots and Texans game, this one is tight. The way that the Patriots defense played in the first game really gives me a lot of confidence that they could win this game. But the Texans defense has just been dominant all year long. and had already showed that they can bring that on the road with them in the postseason. Defense definitely travels. But I think if you watch that Texans game back against the Steelers, CJ Stroud missed a ton of throws, and it's a really interesting conundrum of do you expect a guy like him to bounce back in that environment in the next game and play better and play up to his true potential? Or do you expect that maybe that's just how he's going to play this year? He's just not necessarily on his game. And I think that's going to be the end. That's going to be the discussion in the end. I think CJ Stroud's young enough that his quote unquote experience advantage over Drake May doesn't mean much. And I think that I'm just going to go with the better quarterback in this game, and I'm going to pick the Patriots and Drake May. I think, two things. You have the better quarterback and you have home field advantage. I know that the Texans defense is amazing. I've talked about it a lot, but I think those two factors are enough for me to side with the Patriots in this game. So I'm picking the Patriots, I'm picking the Broncos, I'm picking the Seahawks, and I'm picking the Rams. Either way, I'm very, very excited for this weekend. I feel like these matchups are great, mainly because there weren't many big upsets in the first round in terms of the betting side of things, and kind of who you would have in a power rankings regardless of the record in the course of the season, and also just the way the seeding worked out. I think it created some very intriguing matchups rather than, if obviously, the Broncos and Texans playing each other would kind of be a very, very, that one might be just a really low scoring, boring game. But that's not what the matchups were. Instead, we got these really exciting games instead, and I'm very excited to watch them next week. But let's now move on to a quick recap of the last week in the NBA, starting in the Eastern Conference, as always, where the Pistons are still on top at 28-10. Pretty much every team in the East has been pedestrian or worse in the last week or so, week and a half-ish. In the last 10, the best record in the East is 6-4. The worst record is 3-7. So really, everybody just kind of average. The Pistons leading the pack of the average teams. They're 6-4 in their last 10. The Knicks, 25-14 overall, 3.5 games back. They're just 5-5. The Celtics at 4.5 back at 24-15, and the Raptors are also 6-4 in their last 10. But the Raptors 1 game back of the Celtics at 24-17. Obviously, talked about the fact that the Celtics beat the Raptors over the weekend in the prediction segment. Then you have the Sixers, who are tied in the win column with the Magic and the Cavs, but both of those teams trailing them by a game and a game and a half, respectively, because of two extra losses for the Magic and three for the Cavs. Of course, that means Sixers at 22-16, Magic at 22-18, Cavs at 22-19. Then you have the Heat at 20-19. They are just 1 game back of the Cavaliers. And of course, their play-in buddies are right there with them, the Hawks and the Bulls at 20-21, 1 game back, and at 18-20, half game back of the Hawks are the Bulls. A game and a half back of the Bulls are the Milwaukee Bucks, who are 17-22 this season. Then you have the bottom of the East, the real bottom teams, the Hornets at 14-26, the Nets at 11-26. The Wizards at 10-28, and the Pacers at 9-31. They are 20 games back. And then in the Western Conference, you have the Thunder, of course, still on top, 7-3 in their last 10. Not the best in the league, though. There are two teams actually in the West that are 8-2 in their last 10, and we'll get to them later. But the Spurs, 27-12, are 5.5 games back. And then you have the Nuggets at 26-13. The Timberwolves are a half game back of the Nuggets at 26-14. And then you have the Lakers at 23-14, tied with the Phoenix Suns, who are 8-2 in their last 10, the best mark in the West, tied with one other team. Again, that we still haven't gotten to, and I'll get to them in a second because, wow, is it a shocker? But the Rockets have fallen all the way down to the 7th seed in the West with a 3-game losing streak. Obviously, pretty shocking to see them down there, but again, they're only 2.5 games out of the third seed, excuse me. There's just not much separation here, so not too surprising. Where there is separation is between the Rockets and the Warriors. Again, fewer games between third seed and seventh seed than there are between the 7th seed and the 8th seed. The 8th seed currently are the Golden State Warriors, who are 12 games back at 21-19. Then 2 games behind them are the Blazers at 19-21. A game and a half back of them are the Grizzlies at 17-22. And all of a sudden, nearing the playoff picture are the LA Clippers, who are 8-2 in their last 10. They're 16-23 on the season, just 1 game behind the Grizzlies for the final spot in the play-in bracket. And Frankly, we've been talking about it a lot all year. I mean, I haven't, they were really dead in the water for a while, but Kawhi came back, this team is healthier, and all of a sudden, the West didn't do enough to separate itself. The Clippers are back in the playoff picture. Then you have the Mavericks at 15 and 25 and the Jazz at 14 and 25. They are 2.5 and 3 games back of the Grizzlies. And finally, the bottom of the, they're the worst of the worst, the Kings at 10 and 30 and the Pelicans at 9 and 32 at the very bottom of the West. And now that we're done with the bottom of the Western Conference, that means that, of course, we're on to our last topic of the podcast, which is the last week of college basketball action. I'm not going to give much analysis because, wow, it was a jam-packed. I mean, this is the analysis for the week. It was just a jam-packed week of a ton of great games. A lot of things going on in all these games, but I'll do my best to do some quick analysis and just rattle off some scores otherwise. But number 10, Nebraska beat Ohio State 72-69. That got them a road victory. Of course, I said earlier, had they lost this game, I would have picked them to win the next one. They won both anyway. Number 12, Michigan State beat USC 80-51, continuing USC's downward spiral this season. Number 2, Michigan beat Penn State 74-72. First sign of the Wolverines starting to slip up a little bit. We'll get to what actually happened later in the week. But Minnesota beat number 17 Iowa 70-67. Iowa starting to see some tougher sledding as the schedule itself gets tougher. Number 6 Duke beat number 20 Louisville on the road 84-73. I think this game was a game that Duke needed really to prove their status as contenders because after the Texas Tech loss, it's just one of those things where you don't see much of a challenge on the rest of that schedule. Because of the way that the ACC is, and the Louisville game was arguably the biggest challenge left over. I mean, you could argue for a while about if North Carolina is a different challenge, or Virginia, or Clemson, et cetera, et cetera. But Louisville definitely one of the bigger challenges on that schedule, and early in the season for sure. And Duke was able to pass that test. They won that game. So credit to them. Then you had Florida, who beat number 18 Georgia 92-77. Again, if you want to talk about teams that needed to pass some tests, Florida had lost close game after close game after close game. Here they are storming through the SEC when it starts, and we'll get to what they did later in the week. Obviously, we talked about it in predictions. They beat Tennessee by a ton. But this was the start of it with the win over Georgia. Then you have Oklahoma State. They beat number 25 UCF 87-76. This is not really a ranked upset. These are two bubble teams, but still a big win on the board for Oklahoma State. No offense to UCF, but they're just not a top 25 team in the country. I think most people knew that in the first place, but apparently not the AP poll voters. Then you have number 7 Houston, who beat number 14 Texas Tech 69-65. That is always the classic game in the Big 12, at least over the last 3 years since they've been in the same conference. It has just been nonstop close games between those two, and all of them very entertaining close games, I should add. And then number 22, Kansas beat TCU 104-100 in overtime. TCU really did choke this game late. They had a golden opportunity to come up with a great quad one road win in conference. They just couldn't quite get it done. And speaking of golden opportunities, Providence was up on UConn, I think 9 points with maybe a minute and a half or 2 minutes left. They couldn't close it out. They lost in overtime at home to the number 4 Huskies 103-98 in overtime. Iowa State didn't get tripped up at all. They went on the road, beat Baylor 70-60 in regulation on the road. Number 5, Purdue beat Washington 81-73, a little bit closer than they expected, but a win is a win. Number 11, Vanderbilt really put their stamp on the start of the season with a 96-90 win against number 13, Alabama. Clemson beat number 24, SMU 74-70, a good win again for the Tigers. And then the surprise of the week happened on Saturday, Wisconsin going on the road and beating number 2 Michigan 91-88 in Chrysler Center. I almost said the Big House. Obviously, they did not play in the football stadium, although that would be pretty cool if they did. The Badgers, though, they really needed that win for their season. Obviously, the win earlier in the week over against UCLA was helpful, but this team needed a signature victory. And no offense to UCLA, but they have gone sideways to the point that they are not a signature victory. Beating UCLA is not a signature victory, but beating Michigan on the road definitely is. And also, just in the first 5 minutes of the second half, probably the best offensive basketball you'll ever watch in a college game. If you go back and look at that one, just crazy shot making. Everything that was slightly open went in, and every shot was slightly open, so everything went in. Then you had number 10, Nebraska. They beat Indiana. We talked about that in predictions. Florida beat Tennessee, which we talked about in predictions. West Virginia beat number 22, Kansas, 86-75. I enunciate that like that because the Mountaineers have won their last three matchups with Kansas, despite having, I mean, one season that was awful, 9-23, I think was their final record. One season that was a bubble team under Terran DeVries last year, of course. And then this season isn't going particularly well either. I mean, they're not bad, but they're not great either. And here it is, just another win over Kansas. I have no idea how they keep doing this, but Kansas has the West Virginia problem, clearly. Then Houston beat Baylor 77-55. Baylor, again, not really showing much competitiveness in these games against these upper echelon teams. Number six, Duke beat number 24, SMU, 82-75. I think how SMU is playing in these close games against better teams on the road is probably how people think Baylor was supposed to play in games like that in their conference, but instead it's been the opposite. SMU has beaten North Carolina, stayed close with Duke, stayed close with Clemson. Baylor just kind of getting blown out by those upper echelon teams in the Big 12. Then number one, Arizona made sure that they would be the number one for sure. This week by beating TCU 86-73. Auburn beat Arkansas, as we mentioned in predictions. Speaking of North Carolina, they barely beat Wake Forest 87-84. And then Texas Tech beat Colorado 73-71, a close game for the number 14 Red Raiders, but not as close as Texas, who beat number 13 Alabama 92-88, of course. Okay, fine, by margin, yes, it was by definition a closer game, but the fact of the matter is, I'm talking about how close should it have been? Alabama should not be losing at home to Texas. End of story. Good for Texas to get that win because they desperately needed it to work their way back onto the bubble. But this is not a game that I think anybody expected Alabama to lose. I'm frankly shocked that they lost that one at home. Not shocked, though, that Illinois beat Iowa, as we talked about in predictions. And then finally, number 25, UCF, beat Cincinnati 73-72 to bounce back from their loss as a ranked team. Although, of course, they're still not ranked this week after that loss earlier in the week that they took. So that is all we have for the week in college basketball. That also means that this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast is wrapped up. So please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, January 20th, where we will once again talk about my weekend predictions, review the national championship game, which will have happened the night before, and review the NFL divisional round of the playoffs and preview the championship games. And then, of course, have our weekly reviews of the NBA and college basketball. In the meantime, please be sure to check out my picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted, as always, on Thursday, and my College Hoops Bracketology updates, which come out every Monday. All of that's on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24. Thank you for listening.